Hello and welcome to this podcast focusing on procedural treatments for glaucoma. In this episode, which includes excerpts from a recent educational symposium, Dr. Deborah Ristvet, a Minnesota-based anterior segment surgeon, and Dr. Melissa Tawa, an optometrist and assistant professor at Marshall B. Ketchum University, discuss non-topical therapies for glaucoma. This activity is provided by PER and supported by educational grants from Glaukos Corporation and Sun Pharmaceutical Industries, Inc. First, they'll introduce a patient case, then discuss potential procedural opportunities that might be appropriate.
So we're going to present a case of a 42-year-old male. He was diagnosed with moderate POAG for the last 2 years, and his pressure seems to be pretty well controlled on multiple medications of a prostaglandin and a combination medication. He does have dry eye symptoms from his topical therapies and is really concerned about vision loss. It's just getting harder to keep up with my eye drop schedule. And how many times do we hear that? You know, that's a lot. I can't even take a vitamin in my 40s, so I can't imagine what we're trying to get these patients sometimes to do. And, you know, it doesn't help when they're having side effects and symptoms. So we're going to come back to that. You know, when we talk about laser options, it's not just, SLT or direct SLT. We have a lot of laser options when it comes to surgical and non-surgical. There's a lot of different companies out there that are developing laser-assisted trabeculotomy, so removal of the trabecular meshwork tissue that could be maybe done in the clinic. So I'm really excited about that. We also have, you know, lasers that remove trabecular meshwork in the eye. So that can be done in conjunction with cataract surgery or standalone. So we're in study right now. I actually had, you know, an opportunity to try it, and it was really fun to, you know, learn a new tool. And then we have, you know, cyclodestructive procedures that we could consider to be laser. We talked about ECP this morning and how we're using that. We have micropulse laser, which is, you know, a translimbal procedure that also, you know, helps on the destructive pathway of the ciliary body processes. And, you know, again, those are usually for patients that need additional IOP lowering, not really first-line agents. So let's get into SLT and what it's doing. I always like to keep this very simple for my patients. I say that this is a light therapy, so I don't use laser. I say it's a light therapy that remodels the tissue to really just help the drain. So we're trying to open the natural outflow pathway so that it will work. And we want to do that earlier rather than later, because the tissue can change over time. And we want to make sure that it stays healthy and vibrant over time. And that's why we recommend that they come back at 4 to 6 weeks after the procedure, because this remodeling and the cellular effect, you know, takes a while.
Right. Yeah. And I liked, you know, I used to practice here in the Bay Area, where a lot of patients like things that are a little bit more natural. So if you explain it, you know, we are just enhancing, using this light therapy to enhance your eye's natural drainage system. You know, we're not poking any holes. You know, we're not creating any new routes. We're just enhancing the ability of your eye to do what it's supposed to already be doing.
Next, the panelists will discuss results from the laser in glaucoma and ocular hypertension, or LIGHT, trial. In this study, patients with open-angle glaucoma or ocular hypertension were randomly assigned to receive initial selective laser trabeculoplasty or topical treatment. Outcomes of interest included health-related quality of life, clinical effectiveness, and adverse events.
What was so significant about the LIGHT trial that now has 6-year data is that, you know, we really saw and proved that it was just as effective as medical therapy. And I think that was a big change for why we're thinking the way we are when it comes to glaucoma care. And so when we look at other light findings, what kind of sticks out to me were, you know, the fact that SLT patients were medication-free a little bit more than patients that were on medications. And it's so interesting, too, that those that were on medications actually opted to have SLT after the trial. And so, you know, you can see that patients are looking for other options.
There's also an extension to the LIGHT trial. It's a LIGHT trial specifically looking at the visual field findings from this 6-year data. And so they found that patients who underwent SLT actually had delay in the visual field progression compared to the patients who were on topical medications. And likely that was because of that graph that you saw, that these patients are getting more 24-hour control of their IOP. You're not relying on them to take medications every single day. So not only is it in terms of just IOP reduction, the studies have found that it's just as efficacious, but maybe in the long term, in terms of visual field progression, it actually might be superior.
And that all plays into the invasive nature of what we have to do. Fluctuation of pressure is not good. And so if we can get pressure to be more stable over time, we're not going towards more invasive surgeries. And that's exactly what the LIGHT trial showed us as well, is that less patients needed invasive surgery. How many of you have heard about direct SLT? Yeah, it's pretty exciting, isn't it? So it's a translimbal approach to providing energy to the trabecular meshwork. One of the things that's exciting is that, you know, when we think about how we're treating the trabecular meshwork, when I do an SLT, sometimes you have, you know, PAS or you have areas of obstruction, or it's really hard to get into the angle because of how the patient is looking. There's all these things that can make, you know, life a little difficult with doing an SLT, you know, regarding patients and, you know, their angle. And so when I think about what this translimbal delivery device is doing, is it still targeting the trabecular meshwork 360 degrees? And so, you know, we think about, you know, direct SLT versus SLT, and is it going to be as effective? Remember, this is new to us. It just got released this winter, so we've been using it in our practice, and, you know, it's just been really fun to watch.
In the next segment, Drs. Ristvedt and Tawa turn to considerations regarding the use of two implants, one that delivers travoprost and one that delivers bimatoprost.
So we call this like our diffuser of the eye. It's slow eluting, and you're getting that 24/7 coverage of a medication that we're all very, very familiar with. When they really looked at, you know, where to implant, is, you know, we really are going into the superior nasal quadrant just because of aesthetics. You know, in Minnesota, do they care? Maybe not as much as Southern California. LA, I don't know. But we do try to hide that under the lid. And that's the only thing I wanted to show, is it goes right through the trabecular meshwork. It's seated in the scleral wall. It's 1.8 millimeters, but you see about 1.2 millimeters. When they looked at all the studies, we really didn't see endothelial cell loss. There was very limited, you know, inflammation, and that resolved. So we haven't seen one from the studies that, you know, persisted as far as uveitis. And maybe there was one iris color change, if that, in one of the studies. And so you're just not seeing the side effects that you see with a normal prostaglandin. And so what they wanted to look at was, you know, what the slow-eluting travoprost implant did versus the fast-eluting. And the slow-eluting medication is what is on the market and what is FDA approved. And what they found from phase 3 data is that it lasted up to 3 years. And so we're getting a lot more, you know, kind of effect over years. And we're also seeing this biologic response with the medication going directly to the trabecular meshwork instead of through the cornea. So that has led to an increased amount of travoprost concentration in the aqueous humor, which is affecting the outflow pathway. And when we align prostaglandins to an intracameral travoprost implant, what we found is an additional 1 millimeter of mercury lowering effect. And so again, it's the same medication, but using it in the eye, we're seeing an additional 1 millimeter, which
exactly.
Is kind of cool.
Yeah, very cool.
We have another intracameral implant that's FDA approved called bimatoprost intracameral implant. And do you want to speak on this,
sure.
Melissa?
Sure. Yeah. So this one, you know, unlike the one that we saw before, which was titanium, and it's actually anchored into the scleral wall. It's this preloaded kind of injector pen that comes with the implant. To me, it looks, if you've ever seen those dissolvable collagen implants for punctal plugs, it looks a lot like that. It's teeny tiny. You inject it into the anterior chamber. With gravity, it's going to settle into that inferior angle. And you can see here over time, it biodegrades so that it's releasing kind of this sustained kind of even over time, amount of the medication. We don't have pictures of it here, but if you ever see patients with these, sometimes they degrade in different ways. So they won't always just shrink. Sometimes, I don't know if you've seen it, they kind of explode into this like little golf ball.
Yes.
Looks like a little pebble in the inferior angle. And that does not mean that the medication isn't working. It just degrades differently in different patients and for some other reason.
And like any implant, Melissa, you know, we're always thinking about the endothelial cell, you know, health. And what we've found over time is that it really does not affect endothelial cell loss that's clinically significant. And so, you know, I've been doing this procedure for a while, and I haven't seen, you know, chronic inflammation or, you know, corneal decompensation from that. And, you know, same thing, we're seeing this non-inferiority to timolol, which is always, you know, what we, you know, kind of study against. And what was approved was the 10 microgram dose. And, you know, in the study, they actually put multiple implants right. in, where we're only doing one.
Right. In the original studies, they were putting them in, I believe it was like every 12 weeks. And but we've actually found that the medication lasts a lot longer than they thought in their initial studies. So even if the implant, you're looking at it through gonioscopy, and you see that it's gone, many of these patients are still going to get that sustained IOP reduction because of the proximity that we had mentioned to the site of action, that these patients are actually getting cellular changes that are allowing the IOP to stay lower even after you don't actually see the implant in the angle anymore.
And that's what's so amazing. 30% of patients will still have an effect at 2 years. It was only supposed to work for 15 weeks. And so you can see where we're going when we have those possibilities of, you know, drug delivery devices. And so let's come back to our case two. This 42-year-old male, again, a young patient who's on multiple medications, and it's just getting, you know, harder to keep his eye drop schedule. And it's like, well, buddy, you have a long way to go, right? Hopefully. And so, you know, what else can we do? And so what do you think, Melissa? Would this be an appropriate candidate for laser or drug delivery?
Yeah, I think maybe this patient might need both. They're on three different medications. So I think something like an SLT or laser could be a good option, but they probably are going to need some other IOP lowering, in which case a sustained release implant like we talked about could be another good adjunct option to add for this patient.
And I love to create it as, you know, a time span in their life to say, you know, glaucoma is not curable. It's manageable. And so we're going to kind of create this, you know, individualized treatment algorithm for you specifically to be as least invasive as possible. Because I don't think a 42-year-old male would say, yep, let's jump right into surgery. You know, we have to be realistic when we're looking at age. But also, you know, moderate POIG, he has true disease. And so he's got a long way again, you know, to go. And so, you know, in this patient, I am looking at laser, I am looking at drug delivery, and I am looking at minimally invasive glaucoma surgery, even though he's phakic and he's young, because what's happening with, you know, that angle that we're not catching? Why does he need to be on multiple medications? Does he already have collapse of Schlemm's canal or herniation of tissue into the aqueous collector channels? So these are all the things that are going through my mind as far as reoptimizing. But what we know about, you know, medication in the eye is that that does help with some of the remodeling, and it gives the eye, you know, some time to really start to be restored and working again. So it's just, again, learning about that histopathology and what our medications are actually doing. And so, you know, the big thing I would look at, 42, if we were to do SLT and needed something additional and decided on drug delivery, you know, we have one that's, you know, going to last for up to 3 years that can be taken out at that time. We have another medication that may last for 15 weeks up to 2 years. So you can see when you have a younger patient, you're thinking differently than, you know, say an 80-year-old patient. And so, you know, again, I'm thinking, how can I revitalize that angle the most? One is clinical. One is surgical. And so those are some other things that are going through my mind.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. For more information on this topic, click on the link in the podcast description.